Hello, I'm Mark Steiner, and welcome today again. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the University of Maryland Transplant Program. Nearly 2,000 Marylanders are awaiting for an organ transplant. The University of Maryland conducts research and performs procedures designed to optimize transplant rates and provide least invasive surgeries for organ donors. More information is available about the University of Maryland's Transplant Program and becoming an organ donor online at umm.edu/transplant. We are going to talk about the white paper that was released just earlier this week. That was a revelation to some. People are calling it the Obama white paper on what it would take to kill an American, what it would be allowed to do to kill an American by drone. And Mike Isikoff, a national investigative correspondent for NBC, broke the news on the drone story. And Scott Shane from the New York Times has been writing about this for a long time and has been writing about it again this week. He joins us. He's national security reporter for the New York Times. Marcy Wheeler joins us. She's independent journalist and noted blogger on legal issues and blogs at emptywheel.net. Dr. Stephen David joins us, professor of political science and vice dean for undergraduate education at Johns Hopkins University. His latest book is Catastrophic Consequences, Civil Wars and American Interests. And Scott Shane, Marcy Wheeler, Stephen David, welcome. Good to have you all with us.
Thank you.
Glad to be here.
410-319-8888 is the number here. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, jump on our Facebook page, or write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Again, 410-319-8888. Scott, let me start with you, welcome back to the show. It's good to have you with us once again. The significance of this story. I mean, as I read all the coverage and what Michael Isikoff breaking the story, what new does it add to this debate? How did it kind of shock the media into awareness in America? What did it tell us we didn't know?
Well, you know, it's the only detailed legal document that the Justice Department, the administration, has been willing to make public on the subject of targeted killing, especially targeted killing of Americans. Despite promising to be the most open and transparent administration in history, when he took office, President Obama has actually overseen a fairly secretive administration, particularly on this subject. And despite the fact that, we report, everybody else reports on these drone strikes on a daily basis, and they're certainly not secret from the people on the ground in Pakistan and Yemen, they are treated as a state secret. So it's been very difficult to find out in detail the legal analysis that the administration has made to justify strikes in general, and particularly the strike that killed Anwar al-Awlaki, who people may remember is the American-born Yemeni cleric who lived in this country for many years and was an imam in a series of mosques, eventually moved overseas and eventually hooked up with the al-Qaeda affiliate in Yemen and was participating in plots against the United States and was killed by a drone strike in September of 2011. That was the result of a long legal debate and legal process inside the government, but they have been unwilling to make public the long, detailed, classified legal memo that they put together at the Justice Department to justify that strike. This white paper, the so-called white paper, is a 16-page summary that doesn't mention al-Awlaki, doesn't mention this cleric. It's just the legal arguments for when it is legal to, in their opinion, to kill an American who has, as they put it, become an operational leader of al-Qaeda or an associated force.
So, and I, you know, when you look at this from both your perspectives, Marcy Wheeler and Stephen David, it raises a lot of issues. One of the things we know is that as Scott and many others have reported, that the Obama administration will not say where drones are going, where they've been used, where, and we're not even sure what wars we're fighting or where in what arenas we're involved with, and whether those are the kind of things that should be state secret. Are we living in that different a world where we can only uncover things when they fall into the lap of a reporter, Marcy Wheeler?
Well, and it's important to understand what this is because it there are at least 9 senators who have had this white paper since it was given to Congress last June who have since been saying, we need to understand what the rationale of the administration is. They don't believe that this white paper even shows it. Both Senator Feinstein and Senator Wyden in their discussions about the legal authorizations have referred to memos, plural, so it appears there's one we know about, which Scott and his colleague at the New York Times, Charlie Savage, have reported on, which was written in June 2010. But it appears there's other memos out there. And some of the questions that Senator Wyden keeps asking are, was this authorized under the AUMF, or was it authorized under Article 2, suggesting that that he doesn't even know that, and he's on the Intelligence Committee that is, by law, entrusted to oversee any kind of covert operations, and he doesn't know those basic questions. He's also been asking, does this legal authorization extend to the United States? He's been asking for a year. He's been asking for the memo for 2 years. He's been asking for a year for a list of all of the places where we're using lethal force counterterrorism operations, which can be drones but could also be paramilitary. He hasn't gotten that either. So the administration keeps insisting that these targeted killings are authorized by Congress, but even somebody on the Intelligence Committee doesn't know where we're at war.
And Stephen David, I mean, I know that you've written a lot about that about the issues of drones and the use in war and justification of them. But, I mean, is there a line that has to be drawn, or is this something that should remain, from your perspective, a secret war?
Well, I should say most of my writings have been focusing on the Israeli experience,
right,
although
right.
It is quite relevant, I think, for the American experience also. I mean, you know, as someone who is generally supportive of targeted killing when done correctly, I kind of agree with sort of the tone of the other two guests that we need a fair amount more transparency about this process. I mean, it's always surprised me that the president or a high or senior official can order the killing of an American without any legal oversight, without any due process, and the American is killed, and it's just accepted. I guess it's somewhat of a residue of 9/11 that people feel that extraordinary efforts do have to be made in order to deal with these kinds of threats, that there isn't more of an outcry. Now, I have some sympathy for the Obama administration. A lot of the places where the drone attacks take place, even though everyone knows they take place, you don't necessarily want to rub it in people's faces in a big public declaration. Yes, we're doing this in Yemen. Yes, we're doing this in Pakistan. Yes, we're doing this here and there. But nevertheless, I would be much more comfortable if there was more oversight, more judicial oversight, both before the strikes took place and a kind of after report. I mean, when civilians were killed, why did this happen? Was it anticipated? How could it be made better? I certainly didn't see any of that in the 16-page white paper that NBC News released.
So, I mean, what are we talking about here in some ways, Scott Shane? I mean, I saw the Times talk today about that it was revealed that the secret drone base was used out of Saudi Arabia. When you talk about transparency, how much transparency does the public need? Do we need as a public? Does Congress need to know when it comes to using drones and where they're used?
Well, that's, I suppose, for the American people to express themselves on. I think, you know, the administration would say that secrecy is necessary, certainly for individual operations, and it's fairly obvious. You don't want to, you know, tell a terrorist that you're about to kill him because he will move and you won't be able to kill him if you believe in these operations. But also, there's been a sort of political fig leaf, I guess you could call it, for both Yemen and especially Pakistan, where by keeping this more or less secret from a U.S. government standpoint, the argument that American officials make, they're not, as you put it, rubbing it in Pakistani officials' faces, and they're kind of allowing them to ignore it. And if we were, open out there every day saying, well, we did another strike, another 3 strikes in Pakistan today, then Pakistani officials would be forced by public opinion in their own country to shut down our operations. That's the argument. It's gotten probably a little bit threadbare in more recent, in the last couple of years, because, you know, that everybody knows the drone strikes are going on in Pakistan, and Pakistani politicians talk about it and argue about it all the time. So it's, you know, it's not exactly, I don't think we have a level of plausible deniability, as they say.
Marcy, well, I want you to tackle that. I mean, how much should we know? How much should Congress know? I mean, this is, you know, the one argument people make all the time is that this is better than putting our troops in place, that drones are an alternative way to war, that we have to fight a secret war because we're fighting a different kind of war in the 21st century with quote-unquote terrorists. And others are saying just the opposite, that what we're doing here is fomenting more anger at the U.S., that we need to know that this is undeclared war in many ways, and we need to know where our country is engaged. I mean, so how do you determine where that line is drawn?
Well, and I think one of the other things that's going on here is that, just as an example, Secretary Panetta over the weekend said, we don't approve drone strikes when we know women and children are there. That's false.
Right.
Scott has reported, and I don't know if you want to elaborate on this, but we know that in the case of Baitullah Masood, who's a Pakistani thug, really, we killed him when his young wife was present. After actually not having a casus belli with him until there was a weird intelligence report. So we're not at war, then we're at war, we kill him, we kill his wife, we kill a bunch of people at a funeral. Both the Khost bombing and the Faisal Shahzad bombing attempt were direct responses to that. And that story never gets told in the United States, and it's something that's actually all publicly out there in thanks part to Scott and other people's reporting. And yet, you know, this is the kind of direct logic that we can draw with these drone strikes, and those stories don't get told, much less, you know, what Congress is hearing or what kind of evidence we actually had against al-Awlaki.
But, you know, if I just weigh in, the story is out there, and people with very little digging can find it. I think to the average public, this is not an issue that resonates. Americans are not dying, are not being put at risk. Bad people are being killed. Yes, innocent people are being killed too, but I guess we're told not many. I can understand why people don't accept that. But I don't see college students demonstrating against this in any numbers. I don't see shrill voices arguing about it. I think in part because Americans are not being hurt or killed, and al-Qaeda types are being eliminated. For the most part, people are saying, okay, and we sort of trust the Obama administration.
Well, is that part of the danger? I mean, is what people are talking about here when this report was released is this question of trust the Obama administration. You know, I think that if this was happening and discovered under George Bush's administration, there might have been a different kind of outcry. And that what do we mean by trust administration? We're talking about going to war. We're talking about drones that I think from all reports, whether Afghanistan or Pakistan, have killed many innocent people. And I mean, so that's where this whole thing bubbles up through the press that I think we have to wrestle with and some of our representatives like Wyden and others are trying to wrestle with, which is to say we need to know more. We need to be part of the authorization. We just can't willy-nilly kind of send drones out because an intelligence committee says this is where we have to go. On the other hand, you also can't run a war by committee. I mean, Scott, this is a dilemma I think that the world of our journalism is put before America to decide.
Well, I think one of the remarkable things here is, you know, that we have, you know, it may, you know, I think Stephen's absolutely right that this is not something that people are out in the streets, you know, demonstrating about, but it is a very important development in the history of warfare and the history of counterterrorism. That we're, you know, sitting on a, you know, on a base in Nevada and pushing a button and incinerating folks halfway around the world, And there are other countries building drones now. You know, we're setting a precedent for the rest of the world. What's one of the ironies about it is that it's happened without any public congressional debate. We in the press, you know, and on the op-ed pages debate this all the time. But because it's classified, members of Congress and members of the executive branch aren't allowed to talk about it in public. So you have this weird thing where sort of everybody can talk about it except the people who actually know something. But I think, you know, even for me, it was a little bit of a shock to learn. It's one thing if I can't get the legal memo that justifies the killing of an American overseas. But the idea that the Senate Intelligence Committee couldn't get it, that's a little shocking. They're the ones who are supposed to be the public's representatives who see all these secrets on behalf of the rest of us and are able to exercise oversight. If they can't get this legal memo, you do really wonder, you know, what kind of oversight is possible.
I mean, isn't that a question for, I mean, Stephen David, wouldn't you question that?
Yeah, no, I, as I mentioned, I have concerns with the way the Obama administration is behaving in this regard. Plus, I have concerns about this 16-page white paper. I mean,
What do you mean?
Well, the notion that in order to justify a drone strike, the terrorist has to pose an imminent danger, and then it defines imminent in a way that's not imminent. I mean, when I think of an imminent danger, I think of someone, you know, strapping on a bomb and getting ready to blow something up. But here, imminent could be someone planning something that's weeks, months, maybe years away. So it is extremely broad. Again, even if you do trust the Obama administration, who knows who's going to come next? And as I said before, I would like to see some judicial oversight either before or after, or maybe kind of like that, the courts you have for wiretapping and such, to justify these actions and to assess what went right and what went wrong afterwards. And I didn't see any evidence that this is being done, certainly not in an open manner, and certainly not with the approval of even select members of Congress.
And Marcy, I'd like you to jump in on that as well. I mean, I think that this is, I mean, this is the question. The Intelligence Committee can't get it. Where's the oversight? And what are the limitations? I mean, there could be Americans of Yemeni descent just going to Yemen to study, to do whatever. All of a sudden, they can become. We can decide that they are involved with Al Qaeda. They become an imminent danger to America. Who's to decide that?
Well, and it's important for people to understand that the very first time we tried to kill al-Awlaki was December 24th, 2009. And last year, something called the Webster Report came out with regards to the Nidal Hassan, whether there were any ties between the Nidal Hassan attack on Fort Hood and al-Awlaki. And that report says that it was not until December 25th, 2009, that we believed al-Awlaki was operational. In other words, we didn't know that he was operational until after the underwear bomb, until after that guy confessed, and actually it was later in April, before in the course of plea negotiations, before he implicated al-Awlaki in directing that attack, and his testimony has never been challenged in court because of a number of interesting reasons. But when you go back to that, and it may have been that al-Awlaki was in fact an operational threat on the first time we tried to kill him with a drone. But we didn't know that, and we have yet to get any. I mean, the white paper that came out the other day, there is no way that al-Awlaki, December 24th, 2009, given the intelligence we had at that time, that at least as the Webster Report describes it, there's no way he fits those criteria.
So again, Scott, as a journalist who doesn't shock easily. But who's been covering this a while, I mean, what are the things that I think that is the responsibility of the Fifth Estate at the moment to probe, to find out, to push?
Well, I mean, that's always our responsibility, I suppose. And tomorrow there's going to be a confirmation hearing for John Brennan, President Obama's counterterrorism advisor, who
Right.
He's nominated as CIA chief. And there will be an opportunity to ask him questions about all this stuff, but I'm a little afraid that as often happens, he'll say, "Senator, that's a great question. I have a great answer for you, but I actually think we should cover this in closed session." So the rest of us may not learn that much. As I've been sitting here, They've just sent out about 30 or 40 pages of written answers that Brennan has provided the Senate Intelligence Committee in, you know, to written questions in advance of the hearing tomorrow. So as soon as I hang up, I'll be looking that, over that and see if there's any revelations in there.
Well, and I think one of the issues I think that people have to talk about in all this, Marcy and Stephen, is that Brennan's part of the issue. I mean, many people would argue that Brennan is part of the policy in terms of how we've used drones in the past. He's key to that. And what does that say about where the future is going to go with this policy, with him in
right.
power?
Right, and I mean, I think one of the other things that we've kind of talked around in this conversation, but really is central, it's not clear the drone program in either Pakistan or Yemen is working.
Right.
We have a tactic in search of a strategy, and what the secrecy, I mean, in addition to all the oversight problems and questions about the analysis of the intelligence and questions about whether the process is correct, we also, because it is so secret, can't take a step, and we're still fighting about how many civilians have actually been killed, and the numbers vary dramatically, partly based on what you count as a civilian. And so without that kind of data, we can't step back and say, wait, this isn't working. It's not working because, say, signature strikes, drones used targeting people we don't know, but rather patterns, are a failure, but it does work when we're going after known people in this situation. You know, so we're not having that kind of conversation. And I think the effect of that is that we continue to pursue a strategy which doesn't seem to, I mean, Yemen is not getting any safer. So it doesn't seem to be working.
No, I agree. And I would just add, look, I'm not sure if it's working or not, in part because of the secrecy surrounding this program. And it does seem that drone attacks are going against lower and lower level officials of Al-Qaeda, if they're part of Al-Qaeda at all. It may be that drones work best against senior commanders rather than rank and file people. But we don't really have the information to make these kinds of assessments. And that's not good for anyone, and certainly not good for American policy.
Well, I mean, it seems to be in some ways, for some people, almost a frightening extension of the fact that we have not had declared war in the United States of America since World War II. And each time this happens, each time we go into conflict, less and less information is given the American public. And now with this great technology and this kind of worldwide network that people say still exists, or some network exists in terms of terror, we get even less information. I mean, there's a real danger, I think, just in terms of democracy, how far we can carry this.
But there's also the problem that so many of our laws of war were made to deal with state-to-state conflict. And now we're dealing with, you know, shadowy individuals existing in many different foreign countries, where, as you say, we don't have declared wars. We have armed conflict. And our laws have not kept up with the changing nature of warfare. And this drone campaign certainly illustrates that.
And, Marcy, people need to question, I said, and it's hard to question it in secret, how effective this is and exactly who we're fighting.
Right, and it keeps expanding without even people like Senator Wyden being told who it is expanding to. And then the further out, I mean, you know, we've got drones deployed in Mexico, in Latin America, increasingly in Africa. That's a separate question. And some of those are deployed in the war on drugs, which ostensibly is still within a legal framework. It's not clear that's working either, but these are all of, you know, we're using all, I mean, I think one of the things that's going on is we're increasing, after Afghanistan, after Iraq, we're increasingly using covert operations. And I think that's why not even Congress is getting the information about what's going on. And that's pretty troubling because, you know, it's spanning the world and we're not getting the most, not just we, but Congress is not getting the most basic questions answered.
Marcy Wheel is an independent journalist, a noted blogger on legal issues, blogs at emptywheel.net, which we'll connect to on our website, steinershow.org. Scott Shane, we'll see what he writes this morning after he reads the papers in his hands now. He's a national security reporter for the New York Times, and we will link to all the articles he's written around this. Dr. Stephen Davis, professor of political science and vice dean for undergraduate education at Johns Hopkins University. His latest book is Catastrophic Consequences, Civil Wars and American Interests. Scott, Marcy, and Stephen, thank you so much for taking time with our listeners today.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Talk to you all soon. We're going to take a brief break. When we come back, we're going to tackle the question of minimum wage. And should we raise it? Don't go away.